Poorly Read.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of Poorly Read. Today we're going to make a start on book number 4, which is called...
Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
I mean, I feel like that was one of your better attempts at an accent, I think. Although I do think you moved between two different Scottish accents.
I don't know. I literally could only think of, like, the gruff one and then the really, like, high-pitched, like, Holly Hunter in the piano, like, accent. I guess you won't know that reference.
I do not.
So I'm bringing some culture to this fucking boy.
I just have a different kind of culture.
Yes, I have yogurt culture.
It's called bifidus digestivum.
It's called laxo belly tum tum.
Okay, I'm going to assume that was also a reference.
It was. It doesn't need an explanation. It's such a deep cut. I don't know if anyone else would ever know that.
It sounds like Matt Lucas from Little Britain.
No, it's not. It's, oh God, do you really want to know?
No, let's not. It will forever remain a mystery.
Yeah, so The Goblet of Fire is the book. But it's apparently most people's, like, favourite of all the books.
Do you know what?
Doesn't surprise me.
I will say that I thought this was the best opening and the most enjoyable set of chapters that we've done so far on the pod for me. I was really surprised. I thought, like, it was quite late last night and I just kind of wanted to go to bed. But I was like, no, we're recording tomorrow. Got to listen to these chapters. And I had a great time. Like, I thought they were really good. The opening with the Riddle House.
Got out of Vaseline.
Yeah.
A clean tea towel and away we go.
Exactly.
I agree with you about the opening. I think it's the best opening chapter. Mm. I think it's one of the best chapters in general throughout the book series.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of, I didn't really see the necessity to split the chapters 2, 3, and 4 into those chapters. I think chapters 2 and 3 and 4 could have kind of just been one, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it's kind of like they're almost three, they're like one scene chapters.
Yeah.
Almost, but they're scenes that all take place in the Dursley house.
Yeah, so. And they're all like pretty consecutive.
Yeah.
It's not like anything major happens actually until the end of chapter 4. So I feel like it could have all just been one and it would have actually been fine. So I didn't see why she actually split it.
I know what you mean. Bizarre. Although, like, chapter 2 is very much sort of introspective, focused on Harry, and then chapter 3 brings us into the wider household.
I guess so, but I feel like she could have just done, like, at the end of chapter 2, done, like, the three, like, stars, and then the next paragraph opens, would have been, like, what is the start of chapter 3?
I know what you mean. A lot of Harry Potter chapters are really, really long anyway.
Yeah.
I was kind of fine with it, to be honest. I think,
I was, because, like, luckily it wasn't too much to listen to. Yeah.
All right, so chapter 1 is The Riddle House.
Yeah.
And it's a whole... Well, what we sort of find out is a sort of dream sequence.
Oh, you shouldn't have spoiled that.
Well, it doesn't... It's not really a spoiler. Didn't we literally say Harry is the last Horcrux in episode 1?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so The Riddle House. Well, no, it's not a dream sequence, really.
No, it's not really, is it? It's a whole scene that appears very separate to what we have known to be the rest
far
of the
away.
Story. Far away. In a faraway land, little Hangleton.
Yeah. Where is it? Is it in Cambridgeshire or something like that?
I don't know. Well, it's 200 miles away. We know that much. 200 miles away from Little Whinging. Because at the end, it's like 200 miles away. The boy called Harry Potter woke with a start.
Hmm. That's quite a distance.
That is quite a long way. Somewhere in the north, maybe? Well, they all speak like this. Frank Bryce speaks like that.
Oh, you're so right. You're right. Yeah, yeah.
So where's that? Like West Country, sort of Bristol-y maybe, or Somerset?
Yeah. Yeah, so it must be around there then.
I think Somerset could be 200 miles from Surrey.
Probably. I mean, it took me like an hour and a half to get there by train. So
trains go real fast.
They do go fast.
All right, let's say that. some insight into trains there for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, some trains go past. Thank you.
Back to you in the studio.
That was our Middle Eastern correspondent talking about the Gaza Strip. And in his words, trains go fast. There's sort of like an omnipotent narrator, I guess. You have like a special word for it. What did you call
Omniscient.
It? Oh, is that it? Yeah, okay, it's that word. I've been getting a lot of stick about the words I use, Tom. So yeah, and he's talking about the Riddle House and how the maid went in to clean, as she does one morning, and found every member of the Riddle family lying dead in the dining room.
Yes, there's a... No one's quite sure of the details. It's all been, like, filtered down through various avenues.
Yeah, like, everyone in the town's like, fucking hell, what happened? Because...
Yeah, but all they know about is, yeah, the maid found all three members of the Riddle family dead.
Yeah.
And the prime suspect... only person who's been arrested on suspicion of the murders is Frank Bryce, the house's gardener.
Yeah.
Who vehemently denies it, but everyone's pretty sure he did it. And by after, you know, a couple of evenings of rumours and people speculating, the whole town is pretty sure he did it. But then the autopsy on the Riddle's bodies comes back and shows that apart from their being dead, there's nothing wrong with their bodies physically at all. There's no sign of anything.
What does he say? It was like, the autopsy came back, blah, 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 and all of the Riddles were in perfectly good health. Apart from the fact that they were all dead.
Yeah.
But they all did have a look of terror upon their faces.
Yeah. And then the police said, well, whoever heard of three people being scared to death?
I mean, like, that is a thing.
It is a thing, but three people at once?
I mean, if they're all scared of the same thing.
Maybe.
So yeah, they had to let Frank go.
Yeah, and he stays at the house to tend the garden because it's, I don't know, the only life he's known, I guess.
I did think, like, so how long was he working for free then before the next owners took over and agreed to keep him on? Because it's not like an instantaneous, like, passing of hands.
No, I suppose not.
So I thought that's quite a long time. I mean, I guess he'd just been careful with his money, right?
Yeah.
But still, I was like, huh. And it's weird that every's, like, what's the phrase? I want to say successful, but that's not the right term.
Successive?
Yeah, is that a word?
Yeah, like families that come along in succession.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's like, so successive.
Every successive family.
Yeah. Yeah, are you sure?
Subsequent?
Maybe. Every fucking owner that, that came after the other kept him on. And I was like, that's very convenient and I'm happy for you, Frank. I don't know if this would happen in real life.
No. So, well, you know, people maybe just didn't have the heart to throw him out. Just old gardener bloke.
Well, the last owner keeps the house just for tax reasons. So I don't know why he would give a shit about a groundskeeper keeping the grounds.
Well, so it doesn't fall into complete disrepair, even though the house kind of does.
Right, so this is one of my big questions is why do fucking uninhabited properties fall into like proper disrepair? Because what do you actually do while you're in the property to stop it from falling into that?
Well, I think, I mean, I don't know that it's actually like falling apart. It's just
So when a house isn't lived in and all that kind of shit, why do you like, at least from what we see in movies, why do like vines and shit start like making their way in? And why does it get super, super dusty when there's no one in there to leave dust? And like, why do all these things happen to a house just because no one is living in it? And what changes when you are living in it? Because unless there's things like, you know, like you're fixing a hole in the roof or that kind of thing, what else are you doing to it to make it not go like that? I don't sort of understand what happens.
I think maybe keeping insects and small animals away.
But what do you do to actively do that?
Just by being there.
So they just keep out because you're there.
I think so. Well, if your house gets like mice in it, you're going to get rid of the mice. If your house gets like a fucking ant's nest in the corner, you're going to get rid of it. Like yeah. that stuff, I guess, just creeps in over time, and then dead things leave dust. Mm. I don't know. I'm not an expert, to be honest. I'm just reckoning stuff. Top of my head.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
Just looking out at the world and making my own opinions on how I think it works based on no factual evidence whatsoever. So, you know, pretty in keeping with a lot of...
And isn't that just what we all do, Tom?
Yeah.
Here, I wrote a song about it.
Oh, that was my attempt at some satire there. I hope you enjoyed that. I thought I'd try and move on to a little bit of observational rather than just dick jokes. How do we think it went? Needs work?
I liked it.
Okay, good.
But I guess our listeners can let us know.
Yeah.
So yeah, Frank is fucking 10 in the ground for years still. And then one night he sees a light on in the house.
Yeah. And he regularly has to kick like troublesome, meddlesome kids off the grounds and stuff. And he immediately thinks that this light on in the house is just them pissing about.
Yeah, because they keep on breaking in and stuff.
Yeah. And because it amuses them to see him, you know, stumbling after them with his walking stick going, "Oh, you kids.
You bloody bastards. Come around here. It's bad enough they let you in this country." so he makes his way in and the back door and the front door are still like locked as usual.
Yeah.
There's no signs of a break-in. So he makes his way upstairs to where the light was coming from.
Yeah, and he sees that the fire is lit in a grate in one of the rooms at the end of the hallway, which freaks him out because he's like, are these kids going to like light the fire in the grate?
Yes. You're like, yeah, he sees a fire lit in the grate, which freaks him out because he's like, oh, are these kids going to light a fire in the grate? Oh, that was brilliant. I don't think people understand how good that was.
I mean, I don't. But I'm glad you do.
Just because he sees the exact thing that he's worried about happening and then he still wonders as if it's happening.
So inside the room with the lit fire, he hears a timid and fearful voice saying, "There's more in the bottle, my lord, if you're still hungry." And then even though many, many points in the book, Lord Voldemort's voice is described as high-pitched, I never really imagined it as a high... I just can't find a high-pitched voice scary.
I feel the same.
It's weird. When you read that a voice is described as high-pitched and cold, I get that that's scary. But hearing a high-pitched male voice, like...
Does Stephen Fry do a high-pitched voice?
Kind of.
I'm really struggling to remember now what it sounds like. I know it didn't, like... I didn't have any opinions about it, so I guess I must have thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I remember when I was reading book 7, I kept on literally imagining Voldemort's voice to be like this. And it was so like, so everything he was saying, I was like, this isn't scary at all. But yeah, I sort of, and I think that's why I had a problem with the way that Ralph Fiennes voices the character, because I feel like he tries to emulate that. And I feel like Voldemort really should have like a Darth Vader kind of level of deep voice to be actually scary.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's the way it's written, I guess, right?
Yeah, it kind of is. But yeah, they are speaking in a way that Frank doesn't really understand, because we're kind of on Frank's viewpoint now. And they start talking about, oh, you need to wait till after the Quidditch World Cup. Wormtail says it could be done without Harry Potter and offers to go off and get him a suitable person as a replacement for like the... whatever it is. I want to say ceremony, but that's not the right word.
Ritual,
thank you.
Yeah. Yay, I got one.
And Voldemort...
like, no, it must be Harry. That's going to be my Voldemort. Okay, cool. No, like, no, I've got my reasons for it being Harry Potter.
Exactly.
And Voldemort's like, oh.
Yeah, and he says, Voldemort mentions his faithful servant. I'm a faithful servant. And Voldemort pretty much hits the nail on the head.
Yeah.
And he's like, your devotion is nothing but cowardice. You're just here because you're scared of me and you've got nowhere else to go. Or, you know, that was paraphrased a little bit, but...
that is pretty much it.
Yeah,
and Wormtail's like, no, blah, 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 and then...
brought you Bertha Jorkins, which is actually a thing I talked about in the very last episode.
Was it?
Yeah, in the Halloween special. I mentioned how Wormtail...
oh, yeah.
...brought Voldemort Bertha Jorkins in Albania, and that they tortured... and I said, because this is what I read in an article, that they tortured Bertha Jorkins until she gave them information about the Triwizard Tournament and where Barty Crouch Jr. is, and then that Voldemort hit her so hard with a memory charm that she lost her mind... and so killed her because she knew that she wouldn't be able to reingratiate into society, which is actually not true on this first chapter. She's when Wormtail says that he doesn't think killing her was a good idea, Voldemort says, memory charms can be broken. It was too risky, so I had to kill her.
Yeah.
So, which makes me question the validity of the entire article I read and everything that I discussed in the last chapter.
I mean, as long as it's funny, I doubt people give a shit, right?
Yeah, let's go with that. Yeah, and brain damage and murder as a topic was definitely one of the funnier points of the podcast, I think. So,
and as it always is, right?
Yeah.
Because murder, brain damage, awful, violent sex, and then the way that people pronounce things. Yeah. Yeah, and then at some point, Frank sees Nagini, which I think is the first appearance of Nagini, because I think he makes her after Worm... Not makes her, sorry. I think he turns her into his slave via Horcruxing with the Bertha Jorkins murder, I believe.
Huh. Interesting that he still felt he had enough soul left to do that.
I think he would have kept on, like, say if like the magic number was like 15 or whatever, I think he would have been like fine doing that even.
Yeah, he's in such a weak, powerless state. I would have thought that he's got like 6 or whatever out there, or 5 that he knows about out there.
Yeah, so he would have had 5 out there and made his 6th one with Nagini.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the Bertha Jorkins one. Yeah, I guess he just sort of,
I would have thought that him being in such a weak state, he would have thought, well, you know what? The amount of peeps Horcruxes that I've got out there at the moment is probably enough.
Maybe he just thought that maybe by making the 6th one, it would actually make him, because it makes it 7, it would give him power.
Maybe.
That would reinforce his like weakened state. Not reinforce, that's the wrong word. That would help with his weakened state, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, he summons past. Nagini, and Frank realizes that there's a huge fucking snake slithering past him. And he's like, what?
Yeah, and then he thinks he's going to die, and then he doesn't, because a snake just goes past him.
But then he does.
Yeah. Yeah, so the snake goes in, and then we assume there's like lots of like, hush, hush, yeah. And then...
It says like, Frank got the distinct impression, insane impression, that this man could talk to snakes.
He was taught into fighting snakes. And then Voldemort's like, Nagini tells me that our groundskeeper... Oh, no, there's a muggle standing outside this room. And then Wormtail like throws the door open and they summon Frank inside. And then...
And he confronts him pretty bravely, to be fair.
I mean, what else are you going to do, to be honest? Like...
And in a moment, he's like, my wife knows I'm up here and she will call the police.
And Voldemort's like, you have no wife. No one knows you're here.
You have no lied.
You have no friends.
You're a loser, Frank.
Fucking loser. I've seen your browsing history. But there's like, don't lie to Lord Voldemort. He always knows. And then... Voldemort does quite a lot of explaining, I think, to him, because Frank's like, what did you call me? And then Voldemort's like, I called you a muggle. It means you're not a wizard. I was like, why do you even bother?
Yeah.
Like, just fucking zap him straight away. Yeah, kind of within seconds of Voldemort sort of like saying that he always
Frank's like,
knows.
Well, Lord, is it? Well, if you're so high and mighty, why don't you turn around and face me like a man?
Yeah.
And Voldemort says, I am not a man.
Yes.
I'm so much more.
I'm a weird aborted fetus. Yeah. But it's okay. Bellatrix likes me this way. Yeah. So Wormtail like turns him around. No, then Voldemort's like says something like, but as you wish, I will turn around and face you. Then Wormtail turns him around and Frank screams at the horror of what he sees.
Yep.
And Voldemort reaches into his pocket, pulls out his penis, and goes, Avada Kedavra, and nothing happens. And Voldemort's like, I forgot.
Frank's like, you keep your penis in your pocket?
I was like, yes, it's stretched to the size of a strawberry licorice lace at the moment, so I have to tuck it away. Tuck it away. I have a song for it. It goes, tuck it away, tuck it away, tuck it away now.
Wormtail's like, no, master, not the song. Join in with the chorus, Wormtail.
what I've got, I'm going to give it to your mother. God, no.
Nagini's doing like the snake charm dance.
So yeah, Voldemort fucking whips out his wand and Avada Kedavra is Frank.
He does, and 200 miles away, the boy called Harry Potter woke with a start.
Yeah.
Which brings us on to chapter 2, the scar.
The scar.
Speaking of the scar, Harry's scar is hurting.
It is hurting. It's paining.
Yes.
Yeah, he wakes up and he saw that entire incident with Frank Bryce as a dream.
Yeah, but can't remember much of it. It says really nice, like, simile that I always remember, even from the first time reading it, is that the details of the dream were trickling out of his memory, like trying to hold water in cupped hands, which is something I always think about whenever I'm trying to remember a dream because it feels so accurate.
See, to me, it just, that makes me think of that stupid line in the Prisoner of Azkaban film where the boy is like, they say that trying to catch Sirius Black is like trying to catch smoke with your bare hands.
Oh,
it's like, fuck off.
Fuck off, mate. I can catch smoke with my bare hands. What are you talking about?
But yeah, this is like a much better version of that because you can totally get what they mean.
Yeah, and I quite like that the details that Harry... Because really, for the first-time reader, all we are going to be familiar with about what we've just seen is Voldemort and Wormtail.
Yes.
And there, and we're like, who is this old man? They murdered a person somewhere, but I maybe can't remember the name. And that's like exactly the amount that Harry can remember. He's like, I know that there was Voldemort and Wormtail. I remember that because I know them. And then there was an old man. Who was that? And the details are like kind of fuzzy. And it's like, I feel like it was... The amount of detail that he was able to like properly recall was, I think, pretty accurate for the first time reader, for what the first time reader is going to be able to like read and take away from that opening chapter.
It is, but I also think it's weird that he remembers it like it was a dream when it was, he was actually seeing it. So surely you'd think it would stick in his mind more clearly.
I suppose so, yeah. Because later on, I suppose it's in the next book when he starts to see things through Voldemort.
Yeah.
Or like he starts to get visions of Voldemort. He remembers them very clearly and they're clearly not dreams. There are visions.
Yeah, so that is, it's just a bit bizarre that he, and it wasn't, because he would have only seen the bit from when Frank like approached the actual room, which is not a lot to remember.
No,
to be fair.
Only bits of it from when the viewpoint becomes Frank first person, really. All the shit about like the rumours spreading around the gossipy town.
Yeah, you wouldn't,
like,
he wouldn't have seen that. Yeah. So. Yeah, it's just a bit, you know, bizarre.
Yeah, I guess it is, yeah.
And then after that, we get something which I didn't think we were going to get in this book. We get a fucking annoying recap of things that have happened.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I thought we'd done away with this in the last fucking book. I'm on book fucking 4. I know who he is. If anyone's picking up this book and has never read a Harry Potter book before this, then they're the fucking idiot. For going in at the fourth book in a fucking series.
Yeah, like, I know what you mean, but
I found it so annoying.
It is only a quick refresher.
It's like, it takes up a good majority of the chapter, I feel.
I mean, that's kind of what this chapter is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like previously on Harry Potter.
It kind of is, yeah.
It's like, oh fuck, his godfather is a murderer. No, he's not. Harry's also a wizard, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Voldemort tried to kill him.
I think it gets on with that bit and gets it done with quite concisely, like quicker than it does in the other books anyway.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, there's this like trope with comic books that you always need to assume that the comic book, whatever issue it is going to be someone's first. So you need to sort of have there's usually like, if it's like part of, as most comic books are, like part of a story arc, they'll have like a catch-up blurb sometimes in the very like front of it,
yeah,
and on the inside of the cover or something like that, but there are things so you're not completely lost if it is your first one, and I feel like Harry Potter tries to do that, which is good because maybe someone did just pick up this book for the first time and, you know, so they can still enjoy it to some degree.
Yeah.
But also, fuck off. Just go back to the first fucking book.
Yeah,
you
but
annoying
also...
8-year-old. So Harry wonders who to tell about his scar.
Yeah.
Because he's like, should I tell Sirius? Should I tell Dumbledore? Should I tell my friends?
Can't decide who. And he takes a minute to look out the window at quiet nighttime Privet Drive. And it says there's not a creature in sight, not even a cat. Little nod back to the beginning of the first book there.
I didn't catch that. That's so cool. I like that. Yeah, so so we see that he got a letter from Sirius or something, and it was brought by like a very like tropical bird.
Yeah, so he says, after thinking about maybe writing to Dumbledore, the idea of going to the Dursleys about his dream and scar hurting is just absurd. And then he says what he really needs is someone like a parent, someone who he can go to in that way, which is a little bit like, aww.
Yeah, that is sad.
Yeah, but then he's like, wait, Sirius?
Yeah, he's going to be alive for a whole nother year. Yeah.
Better make the most of it. I mean, I guess 2 years. He dies at the end of the next book, and we're at the start of this book.
I guess so, yeah.
Nearly 2 years.
Yeah, like just shy, maybe like 18 months or something like that.
Yeah.
God, that's fucking shit. He's just got out of prison, then he's just going to die.
Yeah.
But I guess it's sad for Harry. It's not really sad for Sirius.
Sirius ain't going to know about it.
Yeah. He gets hit from behind, doesn't he? No, right?
It's how he would have wanted to go. Harry, well, it's mentioned that the Dursleys' attitude towards mistreating Harry has changed somewhat since they found out about Sirius. because at the moment, like last summer, he had all his shit locked away in the cupboard under the stairs, his trunk and all that. But now he's got all of his stuff right here with him, so he can write to Sirius whenever he wants.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is quite nice. A lot of previous books, the Dursleys chapters at the start are all like, my God, that's so awful. They're mistreating this boy so badly. They're actually kind of like feel good chapters at the start of this book because he's really getting his own back. He's really like,
yeah, he's definitely turned a corner. And I think he's at a good age for it as well. Yeah. He's just turned 14, I think.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like just naturally he would have added a bit more confidence anyway. And just it's nice that things sort of worked out.
Especially at having been able to spend a lot of time away from them and build up his own sense of confidence and build up his own sense of who he is so he can go into any conflicts with them with something bolstering him a little bit.
He's been handling it marvelously his entire life. Yeah. So good for him.
Good for him. Exactly. But now he just has some tools to do it even better.
Yeah.
He'd had two letters from Sirius so far that summer already, and they've been delivered not by owls, as was customary in the wizarding world,
but by slaves.
And Harry thought,
Sirius, it's so good to have money again.
Yeah. That explains all the tattoos. Delivered by large, brightly coloured tropical birds.
Like parakeets.
Well, I think they're bigger than that because Harry says in his letter, the last bird you sent was huge. It could barely fit in the window.
Hmm.
So I think they're like, I don't know, some magical bird.
That's weird.
Yeah, they're like massive birds.
Maybe it's just a parrot and Harry was just being over.
Harry's just never seen one before.
Yeah, he's like, fucking hell! He says that and it's just Petunia with like a sponge in her hand. She's like, Harry, it's not even a bird. I'm just cleaning the windows.
Well, those tabs Sirius gave me for my birthday. Really kicking in. So Harry writes a letter to Sirius. He doesn't mention the dream because he doesn't want to like freak him out too much. He just mentions that his scar is hurting.
Yeah.
And he seems to spend half the letter talking about Dudley.
Does he?
Yeah, he's like, oh, Dudley's diet's not going too well. He threw his PlayStation out the window the other day.
I did like the name check of PlayStation.
Yeah, there's another name check coming up at the start of chapter 3 as well, which I found hilarious.
Okay. Yeah, then he sends it off, didn't he? Or does he?
Not yet.
No, yeah, he doesn't, sorry. I, as per usual, went too soon. then we go into chapter 3, the invitation.
So Harry heads downstairs and Uncle Vernon's face was covered by
the same day?
I think so, because it's like really early, like first thing in the morning.
Ah, okay.
When he wakes up from the dream.
Right, okay.
He heads downstairs. Uncle Vernon's face is covered by the morning's Daily Mail.
Of course it fucking is. Oh my God, that's perfect.
I know. I was just like, no way. Could she be using Daily Mail in just the general term, as in it's the mail that comes daily? But she wouldn't have known. That was deliberate, I'm sure.
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah. And it's, I was just like, that fits so well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that I found that really funny. And it talks about Dudley's school report that he got back. Harry mentions in his letter to Sirius that Dudley's diet is not going too well. Now we find out why. And Dudley's school report has basically come back to say that he's a fat little shit.
There's a lot of like fat shaming with this character. Like,
true.
It's so weird, but being fat is considered like a fundamental like flaw in his like personality, it seems. And I was thinking, I bet you wouldn't necessarily have that in a book written now, that wouldn't be such a like prominent part of why he's like bad and disgusting.
No,
it's
yeah,
really harped
right.
upon how him being that big equals bad and stuff.
It is quite clearly sort of framed in a way that it is a result of him, his like gluttony as well. Like it's not like it just talks about how he's fat. It talks about how he's constantly cramming his face with chocolate and cake and it's sort of
framed as the like really like abuse in a way that his parents are sort of like, it's like they're
yeah,
like
beat him up.
They're doing it to him in a way.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, like it was like the school nurse wrote like a letter home saying that this needs to be sorted, and it's like Petunia couldn't like deny it any longer or something.
Yeah,
it says like
all of the behavioral stuff they've managed to just like excuse away.
Yeah.
Like, well, he's a boisterous little boy, but he wouldn't hurt a fly. And Vernon's like, well, I don't want a Nancy little sissy boy for a son anyway. Yeah. Good job, Dudley. Just awful
God,
people.
Yeah.
And yeah, I said and had nowhere to go. That's it. but the nurse writes home and is like, we literally don't stock uniform big enough for him anymore.
Yeah.
Which they just can't, and here's a diet plan, and so they can't do anything about that, so he's on a diet, and they have little like slices of grapefruit for breakfast. So Harry's like, he sees like the disappointed looks on like Vernon and Dudley's face, and they're eating their grapefruit. And it says that Harry, now that he's got all of his stuff with him in his room and is able to receive correspondence with his friends and stuff, he got 4 birthday cakes for his birthday, and he's still got 2 of them upstairs. So he's like, he's fine. He's going to go upstairs and have a proper breakfast soon anyway.
Didn't he get cake last year that was getting like, there wasn't there like a sentence about it getting like increasingly stale as the summer had worn on?
I don't know. I don't remember there being cake last year.
It might be next year's book, there's a line that he's got the cake under his floorboards again, but it's getting increasingly stale.
I do remember cake under the floorboards.
There's cake under the floorboards in this book though.
There's that cake and
you probably it remembered it because like you
listened to it. Sounds like the ramblings of a there's cake under the floorboards. It's in this book and it's in another book.
Oh, God. Oh, I saw a Harry Potter cake in the supermarket. Yes. No, not yesterday. Maybe the day before. And it was in the shape of like the Hogwarts crest. It looked fucking dope.
Did you buy it?
No, I'm going to get it for my birthday for myself, I think. Because I know that no one else is going to fucking get it. I'm going to bring it home, put a napkin around my neck, get a knife and fork and eat it.
And stab myself.
So yeah, Harry's fucking living the high life.
He is. The doorbell rings.
Oh, hold on. Can I just say that? Yeah. So Hermione sent him like sugar-free treats for his birthday because her parents are dentists.
Did she?
Yeah.
I missed that.
And I thought that's fucking cruel because sugar-free stuff makes you shit. I, for one, am highly allergic to, is it xylitol or one of the, there's a few different sugar alcohols they use in sugar-free things. And most of them have a warning that they may produce laxative effects. There's like sugar-free Haribo, like gummy bears that people, if you eat in any quantity, the Amazon reviews.
I've seen that thing. Yeah, the Amazon where people bought like packets off them. And yeah.
It does, yeah. I remember, I don't know if I told you this story before, about being on the boat coming back from like one of like the Disney resort locations.
No.
So in Disney World, our hotel was by a lake, and then you could get a boat from the hotel to like the Disney shopping district. And I had bought some sugar-free Goofy gummy snakes or something like that. They had a regular one, which is nice, and then a sugar-free one. I was like, oh, I'll get that. And it was on the way back, and I went to my friend like, I don't feel so good. And I was like, I think I really need to fart. So I thought I'd let like a quiet one go, but I was like, this feels wetter than usual. And then I went like, dude, I think I just shat myself. And like, luckily we weren't that far from the hotel, but I like clenched until we got there, and literally I ran into the bathroom. And it was so loud coming out of me that I actually just shouted out to my friend, I'm so sorry. But yeah, that's my sugar-free story.
Nice. That's your shitting yourself at Disneyland story. Yeah. Everyone has one.
Oh god. So yeah. Don't eat sugar-free things. Unless you're constipated.
Oh, and then it might help.
Yeah. Then eat away. Just make sure you're near a commode.
Yeah.
So yeah, what arrives?
The doorbell rings, Vernon answers, and he's like, you boy, commands Harry into the living room, and it's a letter that the postman found very curious and wanted to know where it had come from. And I think the letter is excellent.
I knew you would. Literally, I was like, what fucking, like, moron. Right, so just so anyone who doesn't fucking know, Mrs. Weasley has sent this letter, right? She's covered it in fucking stamps and wrote the address in a small little rectangle, like, up in the corner. And I was like, you're not a fucking idiot.
I know.
Mean, like, you clearly are, I guess.
There are a couple of moments like that. Where you just think, you would know.
Yeah, you would know. You might put two just in case.
And also, Arthur calls electricity ecultricity.
Does he?
Which is like, you work in the Muggle artifacts. Oh, that, like, and you're really into Muggles. Like, you would know what that fucking word is. Anyway, yeah.
It's so frustrating. It is so frustrating.
I didn't find it.
And they're fucking poor anyway. Stamps are not exactly cheap. So she bought like how many fucking books of stamps just to send this fucking letter? I tell you what, why didn't you just fucking apparate there and put it through the fucking letterbox yourself? You stupid bitch. I'm sorry. I can't deal with it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have differing opinions on that then. The stamps thing for me was just a little whimsical add-on. The content of the letter I liked, even though it was obviously like she mentions like send the letter back in the normal way, which I thought was a bit insensitive to write, and I thought she would know that that was a bit insensitive to write. But still,
The Weasleys don't know, I think, how shitty they are, do they?
No, they don't.
So I think she...
Which is fine. Yeah, she basically mentions that they've been able to get tickets to the Quidditch finals of the Quidditch World Cup, which is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. We'd like to pick Harry up, and we're happy for him to spend the rest of the summer with us. Could you send a reply back in the normal way? Because I'm not sure the Muggle postman has never been to our house, and I'm not entirely sure he even knows where it is.
Yeah.
I do hope I put enough stamps.
Jesus Christ.
Vernon throws a shit fit similar to the one Gifton just threw.
Yeah, Vernon just grabs Harry and he's like, what fucking moron would put this many stamps on the letter?
She would know how many stamps to put on the letter.
Oh, God. And then, so Vernon's like, what does she mean, the normal way? And then Harry's like, oh, you know. And then there's like a sentence like interjected like, and without thinking, he said, by owl. And that's like tips Vernon over the edge.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah. And Vernon's basically reaction is to be like, no, you can't fucking go to the fucking thing, you little shit.
Yeah. What is Quidditch? And then Harry's like, oh, it's a sport we play on brooms. And Vernon's like, ah! Yeah. And his fucking vein on his forehead just bursts.
Yeah.
He has a hemorrhage. Harry's like, but no one put dicks in your nostrils. And Vernon's like, oh, as the blood's pooling in his face.
It's a reference from the last book. But so yeah. Harry basically mentions that he's going to have to let his godfather know.
Oh, yeah, that's it. He goes, fine, I can't go to the Quidditch World Cup. Can I go now? Only I've got a letter to send to Sirius, you know, my godfather.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, blah, blah, blah.
Are you still in contact with him?
Still in contact with him.
Yeah, does he send you nudie pictures? Yeah. Can I have one? I might like his tattoos, you see.
Yeah, and so Vernon's all conflicted because he wants to make Harry miserable and say no, but he also really wants to get rid of Harry, and then the murderous godfather potentially finding out that he's been denied something to
also,
move the edge, and he says, fine.
I'm being funny. Why did the Dursleys even believe Harry when he says that
this guy's his godfather? I did think that. He hasn't seemed to have provided any sort of proof.
Yeah.
Unless he showed them the letters or showed them the massive birds.
Yeah, or I would need like a photo of me and like him and Sirius to prove to me that that was the guy I saw on the news.
Yeah, maybe he showed him.
Otherwise, I'd be like, no, you're a fucking liar.
I mean, maybe he showed him the picture of Sirius as best man at his parents' wedding. But that's a long time ago, and he said it's almost unrecognizable.
Like, he says it at the train station when they pick him up, and they seem to believe it from
exactly.
The thing. And it's like,
and also, I can't imagine the Dursleys being willing to be shown a picture and had it explained like that—a picture of the Potters. You know,
maybe they just don't want to take the risk just in case.
Yeah, maybe.
And I guess Harry hasn't lied a lot, so maybe they don't just disbelieve him. Even though they might act like they don't believe him, maybe they do at first. Am I making sense? Probably not. I don't know.
Well, they do believe him.
Maybe I'm going to go and tell my godfather is a euphemism for something
that Harry doesn't even know about.
Yeah.
But Vernon and Petunia think that he knows about it. And they're like, shit, how does he know about the godfather code? He's got some real dirt on us, Petunia. He knows about the bodies.
Damn, why did we buy him that Polaroid camera that one Christmas? He has photos of everything. Of all 10 things that we did before he ran out.
You heard him say if he develops them in a certain potion, he can make them move. Harry heads back up to his room, all pleased with himself, and he finds Hedwig there, looking kind of sassy and annoyed. And then the reason for that becomes apparent quite quickly when he says what feels like a feathery grey tennis ball bashes into the side of his head.
I would have screamed.
I mean, beak first.
Ooh. I would have just like got a tennis racket and tried to swat it, thinking it was a flying rat.
Yeah, you reckon Harry's just got a tennis racket within arm's reach in his room? I just got a tennis racket.
Well, they need something to strap to their shoes when they traipse to Hagrid's in the snow, right? Yeah. So, Also, how did the bird get into his room? Was his window open?
I mean, that's a question about any time owls just appear having returned.
I guess
he
might
keep
the window open all the time just in case one comes.
Yeah, I mean, it is the middle of summer.
That's true. Yeah. And it is a very tiny room that probably gets hot and smelly very quickly.
Yeah, it's got a 14-year-old boy living in it.
Yeah. It's got a fucking reek.
Yeah.
Yes, Harry gets a letter from Ron.
Yeah, it's a letter from Ron just kind of quickly reiterating everything that Molly said in her letter. Just like, Dad got tickets to the World Cup. We've sent word to the Muggles asking if we can come and pick you up on Monday. But it's really just like, we're going to come and get you, whatever they say, basically. Like, if they...
Makes you wonder why Molly even bothered. Why didn't they just send that one and then Harry could have asked?
Yeah, I suppose so. I guess they just thought they were being courteous, maybe.
I think a phone call would have been more courteous. And I don't care what... I know Ron fucked it up the first time, but Arthur should know how a telephone works.
Yeah.
He could have just phoned.
Should know how the post works.
He should know how fucking being a human being works. Oh, it makes me so... I'm so mad.
So Harry sends his reply with pig, as is all we know the owl by at the moment. He's like, pig? He was like, maybe Harry just couldn't read Ron's writing. we come to know that's the shortened version of that little owl's name. And he then adds the
which
bit about...
is...
Which we'll find out.
Oh, I want to know now.
And he adds the bit about the Quidditch World Cup to his letter to Sirius. Ask Hedwig if she's up for a long journey. And she clicks her beak and sticks out her leg as if trying to demonstrate how a post owl should properly behave. So he sends the reply to Ron with Pig and the letter to Sirius with Hedwig. And then he pulls out some cake and just lies on his bed and just takes a moment to reflect on how much better his life is now than it has been before. He has cake and Dudley only has fruit, and he's going to the Quidditch World Cup and getting out of the Dursleys 2 weeks early.
That's a pretty swish summer.
Yeah. And it's nice that these chapters, yeah, like you say, that he's really turned a corner, and these Dursley chapters are like kind of feel good chapters now.
Feels nice.
I'm so glad he's got cake. I want cake now.
Yeah. Should we go get that Harry Potter cake?
Oh, can we please? I bet it tastes like shit, though.
I bet it's your bog standard icing over sponge.
Yeah, fucking Madeira cake.
Yeah.
So disappointing.
Maybe some cream and some jam.
It will have that, but I reckon it'll taste like so like middle of the road that it might as well not have any filling at all. You know what I mean?
I think for me, most cakes I've had, I could give or take. There have been a few cakes that have been really exceptional, but they have to be like really well put together cakes in terms of what flavors are in them for me to actually think it's worth the effort of getting my mouth around a fucking piece of cake.
They are, but yeah, it's difficult.
Cake is rarely my dessert of choice unless it's cheesecake.
Oh, God, that is such a you thing to want to eat.
You don't like cheesecake?
I do, but it's just such like a Tom like dessert.
You say that about things sometimes, and I really don't. I can't find anything that connects the things that you say it's are just, so me.
It's not in like a shitty way. It's just such like a you like thing that is usually like the opposite. I would like something at the opposite end of the spectrum. So where you would like the cheesecake, which is quite, it's verging on like, a savory dessert almost.
Depends on the cheesecake.
I mean, in any sort of, unless it's got loads of shit on it, say if it was just a cheesecake, it's really nice, blah, 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 but it's very much on this like more.
It's not a like, fucking massive, sticky toffee thing covered in.
Yeah, whereas
sauce.
My cake on this end would be like a highly synthetic, like icing everywhere, fucking like.
Sugar fest.
Yeah, just like a pink fucking trollop mountain of cake.
A trollop mountain, you say? Oh, I like that.
Oh, yeah. It just tickles me how our things are so like opposite, because I could always think that is such a me thing and that is such a Tom thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny how people are different, eh? Yeah.
All right, then, on to chapter 4.
Yeah, back to the butter.
That was, I mean, I don't even know what that was attempting to be.
I wasn't trying to do anything in particular.
Oh, right.
Just throwing sounds out there, see what happens. So Vernon says that the Weasleys better not show up in robes and shit because he doesn't want fucking...
Yeah, what are they wearing?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's all like the tension is just unbearable in preparation for their arrival. So yeah, they're going to be arriving at 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock the next day. And when Harry tells them that, they're like, "Hoik!"
Yeah, that was a good sound.
No, oh, thank you. and then Vernon just sort of, after a little while, Vernon drops a comment like, "They're going to be driving, I assume." And Harry's like, "Oh,
sure." They'll be driving a car and parking outside. Yeah.
Vernon's like, "Why are you doing an American accent?
Why are you talking like you're lying? I'm not. Yeah, this is my truth voice." So yeah, it gets to five and no one's arrived.
Yeah.
Gets to 5:05, no one's arrived. Gets to 4:15.
And they're all like, Vernon's getting all flustered.
Fucking typical.
Typical. These people obviously don't set much store by punctuality. Yeah. And they're Vernon's put on his best suit as well. He's like, what? Yeah, why?
You know it looks like shit anyway.
They hear Harry can't take the tension, so he goes out and sits on the stairs.
So he just has a massive raspberry. Yeah.
And then looks around like, huh? And then he suddenly hears like a big boom and then some screaming as the Dursleys all run away, run to one end of the room. And Harry comes in and he's like, hey, ¿qué pasa?
Yeah, then he hears voices from the other side of the wall that should be the fireplace.
Yeah, so they've got a blocked up fireplace with an electric fire in it.
Yeah.
As, you know, most people do, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, Arthur's fascinated by the, Harry's like, he hears all the Weasley's voices in there and he's like, oh shit, they've tried to get here by flu powder. Yeah. And he goes, the fireplace is blocked up. And there's like, well, why would anyone block up a fireplace? He's like, they have an electric fire. He's like, do they? Fascinating.
He goes, are they having an eclectic fire?
Yeah.
It's like, and it is eclectic, he says, isn't it?
I think it is then.
And then, Evan is like, you're extraordinary, blah, blah. And then Arthur says, okay, everybody stand back.
Stand back, Harry. Only one thing for it.
A little bit of cock magic. And I was like, I don't think it'll work. I can't even see you.
You don't know the firepower I got in this thing.
It cuts diamonds. And he fucking blasts the fireplace out.
Yeah.
And everyone understandably screams.
Yeah. Dust and bricks and shit go everywhere.
Yeah.
And Arthur's like, oh, sorry about that, but don't worry.
Like, sorry about that. Oh, God. I did put, that's like fucking rude.
Yeah, it is. It is. But I guess his sort of rationale is that he knows he can fix it, no problem. Like, and so, and he thinks that there'll be reasonable people. And once he says, look, I'm sorry, I'll be able to fix it and clean everything up, no problem. Once I've sent them home.
Yeah.
I'm sure he probably thinks that if they're reasonable people, they'll be like, well, you know, okay, I guess. Like, maybe they'll understand.
Yeah, I think, say, if I was a reasonable version of the Dursleys, I would have been super, like, skeptical and a bit shitty about everything until literally he fixed it all. Then I would have been like, okay.
Okay, yeah, all
right. I would have liked to have seen it to believe it, though.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, you just fucking destroyed a wall in my house.
Yeah.
Yeah, to pick up a boy that we don't even like.
Yeah.
Nothing about this is okay.
Yeah. And then Arthur, when he's talking about the fire, he's like, he says, like, you must tell me more about, like, electricity. And he pronounces electricity wrong. And I'm just like, he works with muggle shit and he's really into muggles. He would know how to pronounce electricity. It's so stupid.
What would make more sense if he was like super fucking like knowledgeable about it to the point where he like taught himself how to like rewire a plug and that kind of stuff, because he's so fucking into it.
Which like
it.
He has like a fucking workshop where he does that shit.
So it makes no sense that he would pronounce things wrong.
Yeah, it's annoying. Yes. And Fred and George, someone says, Harry's like, oh, I'll just run up and get my things. Fred and George are like, we'll go and get it. Because they, I guess, remember where Harry's bedroom is.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. But they go get Harry's shit. And while they're waiting, Arthur makes a few attempts at conversation that don't go well. And, you know, the Dursleys are obviously wankers. But if I was them, I wouldn't be best pleased with this guy at the moment either.
Everything about this, I think I would have been like, I might have had to go and wait in the kitchen just because I couldn't deal with what was happening in like the living room.
Yeah.
I just wanted him to fix this shit and go.
Yeah, exactly.
Go back inside.
And, you know, Arthur, he's trying to make it better and say, you know, once I'll start a fire to send the boys back with flu powder, and I'll just tidy everything up, and like shows his wand, and then he's like, and then I'll before I apparate home. And Harry's like, he's quite sure the Dursleys didn't understand any of that, and they're just looking at him with terror. And Dudley's like trying to hide behind his dad, like clutching his bum, because he knows the last time he came into contact with a wizard he ended up with a pigtail.
The pigtail.
a wizard who entered the room in a similar fashion to one that Arthur's just entered this room.
I mean, that's anime. They fucking know how to get into a room, innit?
Blast their way through.
Yeah.
And then say, sorry about that.
Fucking bastards. Yeah, the boys, the twins come back. Fred drops some candy on the floor.
Accidentally yeah. spills some candy on the floor. And then Arthur lights a fire so the kids can go. Fred and George and Ron, I think, all go. I mean, why did they even come?
Yeah, actually.
They really didn't need to.
Yeah, Arthur should have just apparated into the house. A question about this as well. I would have thought that Dumbledore would have put anti-apparition charms on that house.
Yeah. And is the apparition stuff... Because you can't apparate into someone else's home, right? Is that true of Muggles' homes?
No, but you can be. But you can only not do that because wizards put anti-apparition charms on the houses.
Oh, I see. Right. It's not just something that comes inherent with a place being someone's home.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So I would have thought that Dumbledore would have done that to that house.
I would have thought so. Case. Can you apparate out of a person's home?
No.
Similar thing.
Yeah, because
right?
that thing where in book six, I think, where they have to always go to the edge of the gate at the burrow before they can apparate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was like, curious.
Yeah. Well, and then just before Harry's about to step into the fire and go, he sees a Dudley who has scrambled to the floor to try and sneak one of these sweets that the twins dropped.
He picked up a Tun Tongue Toffee. If you don't know the name of it yet, but that's what it is.
Right. And his tongue's lolling out like a fucking weird earthworm.
Yeah, it's like purple and like spotty.
Yeah.
And like proper like exorcist tongue, like a foot long.
And Vernon and Petunia lose their shit.
Yeah, Tuna starts trying to yank it out. It's making me feel sick. And then Vernon starts hurling like figurines at.
Yeah, and because Arthur produces his wand and he's like, oh, don't worry. I'm sorry. They're just pranksters. I'll clean that up, and starts like trying to point his wand at Dudley. And Harry kind of wants to stay and watch, which I would as well.
Yeah, so Harry goes, he flews off. He's like, the last thing he saw was Mr. Weasley blasting a figurine out of Uncle Vernon's hand.
Yeah, like, no, really?
Yeah. I just thought these Dursleys, they really do, they get it in ways that they shouldn't. That they should, but that they shouldn't if they're going to keep having Harry back. Because by now, they would have said, no, that's enough.
Yeah.
I don't want you, this is like... After the pigtail thing, I would have been like, I'm not having you back in my house.
I wonder if they were under any pressure from Dumbledore.
As far as we know, the only time that he spoke to them was when he sent Petunia the letter in book five, after the letter he left with Harry in book one.
I don't remember that.
Oh, so he sends her the letter because when Vernon's about to kick him out after the Dementor attack.
Oh, right.
And then Petunia's not saying anything. And then a letter comes through the thing from Dumbledore and it's a howler. And he goes, remember my last. And then Petunia's like, the boy stays, Vernon. And then he's like, what? And then she's like, the boy stays. That's it. And then she like walks off or something. And that's just like the end of it. And that's like, Vernon doesn't quite know what to say. But yeah, because I think the first letter, Dumbledore explained exactly why Harry has to stay there, because otherwise he'll be in danger again. So even though she's like, hates him, she doesn't want him to die per se.
Yeah. That's the end of chapter four then.
Yeah, that's the end of this chapter. The book does get better than this, thankfully.
Well, I really enjoyed those chapters.
I did too. I'm just being a shit.
Yeah, I'm really excited to... I feel like... I don't know, when I remember Harry Potter and I remember the things I love about it, I'm mostly remembering the stuff in the sort of later half of the book series. The stuff when stuff starts getting serious with, I don't know, with the more immediate threat of Voldemort and stuff like that. And this book is starting to enter into that kind of later realm where the stakes are really raised and Voldemort's a real threat.
Well, yeah, like... It all sort of very much, not in terms of story-wise, but in terms of Harry's fortune, it all sort of goes downhill from the end of this book onwards, really. But yeah, this is most people's favourite book for a good reason, I think. A lot of good stuff happens in this. A lot of preposterous stuff, but it's all in terms of actual...
Yeah, a large part of the larger plot doesn't really make a lot of sense if you think about it, but we'll talk about that at length, I'm sure.
And I will say, just quickly... it doesn't make sense in a way that was completely unnecessary. If the plot was just written as it was and then maybe tweaked leaked a little bit once it was like revisited before, like during the editing process or whatever. I think it could have been tweaked in a way that would have made everything that happens not like contrived.
Mm.
And I personally would have appreciated that more. So I think if I'd read this for the first time as an adult, I would have arrived at these same like thoughts and feelings of why the fuck would you do all that, you know?
Mm. Okay.
So, yeah, I'm
well, that's that's nice and ambiguous and cryptic. I look forward to finding out specifically what you mean by that in later episodes.
I mean, it's going to be a while. I'm just
it
letting you know.
It is going to be a while. I'm sure we won't be able to resist. Just jumping ahead. We never can.
Oh, we can't help it. But yeah, so this is the start of a what I'm sure would be a truly magical journey.
I mean, literally.
Yeah. Into the goblet of fear.
Oh, God.
One day I'm going to hear upon an accent. It's so perfect. Everyone's going to be blown away.
For now, just keep on trucking with the Scottish, though.
Was that even Scottish?
Well, no, not really.
But yeah, so thanks for listening, guys. As always, visit us at PoorlyReadPod on Instagram, at PoorlyReadPod on Twitter, or email us anything you want at poorlyread@gmail.com. So yeah, as always, I've been gifted.
And I've been Tom.
And Hagrid has been Hagrid. Yeah.